Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. My guest today is Neil Young. Neil is the head men's basketball coach at Ohio Northern University in Ada, Ohio. And in 2023, he will begin his second season leading the program. He was previously the head coach at Goshen College in Indiana and also at Covenant College in Tennessee. He's had success at every stop. He brings a great deal of passion and energy to my alma mater, the Ohio Northern University. I hope you enjoy today's conversation with Neil Young. Coach Young, thanks for sitting down with me this morning. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know that your time at Northern, probably you've used the phrase whirlwind before when we've talked. I can't imagine there's a time when it actually feels like it slows down a whole lot in the world that you live in. But you've been here now for, well, how long? How long have you been located in Ada and kind of feet on the ground, so to speak?
Yeah, it's been a little over a year that we've been here. So we just moved into we just bought a house in town and just moved there about a month ago. So we're kind of finally in our spot that we're going to be in, which feels good.
So I want to talk a lot about your time here, but want to talk really, I mean, if you're familiar at all with this podcast, it's really become quite a storytelling apparatus, really. It's my belief that anybody that's dedicated any amount of their life to the game of basketball has a story to tell that's basically unique. And I think there's a lot to be gained from people's stories, and probably maybe as much as or more than a lot of people that I've been fortunate enough to have on the podcast. I think your story is one that is going to be really instructive, valuable to people, and worth telling. So I'm just going to kind of get out of the way for a second and let you talk a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up? You know, what was your high school and college experience like? And really, since you've committed your life to coaching, the early influences that led you that direction, where you kind of knew that's where you were headed.
Yeah, for sure. Grew up Muncie, Indiana, at kind of the height of like peak Bob Knight versus Gene Katie. But I was a Ball State fan. So my dad was a great athlete. My dad played like six sports in high school and then ended up playing volleyball at Ball State for the legendary Don Shondell. And so as an alum, and we lived in Muncie, he was an alum, he was a former athlete there. So just kind of grew up on Ball State's campus, going to basketball games, football, volleyball, just kind of going to stuff. But basketball was where it was at for me growing up, going to those games. You know, that was peak Mac. I mean, it was unbelievable basketball. And so I was kind of like the only Ball State fan that I knew. Everybody, you know, all my friends, IU, Purdue, Notre Dame, but I was a Cardinal. You know what I mean? I loved it. And then I also grew up with three younger brothers. And so, you know, we were just kind of, you know, typical Midwestern boys. I mean, it was just, we were always into something, competing, playing around outside, doing stuff together. Kind of the joke is, you know, we kind of drove my mom crazy a little bit. Like, we'd be in the house, and next thing you know, you kind of make up a game, and you start playing, and you start competing, and then 2 minutes later, there's a fight. And mom's like, get outside. You know what I mean? So then you go outside, and you're like, all right, what are we going to do? Well, let's do this. You know, we do something, you know, get into it, and all of a sudden it becomes competitive. There's a fight. Get back inside, you know, so we're constantly inside, outside. So I just grew up, sports were a big part of my life. Just loved, I think the thing I loved about sports more than anything early in life was the atmosphere, kind of at those Ball State games, that atmosphere was unbelievable. And just like the social component, you know, I don't even know that I loved the sports themselves. I'm sure I probably did, but what I remember the most growing up was the atmosphere and just all my friends played. That's what I did with my dad. That's what I do with my friends. That's what I do with my brothers. Just a great social experience too growing up. And ended up playing in high school for a coach that, in my opinion, is a Hall of Fame coach, Paul Keller, Delta High School. I mean, it's so cool, like I tell people, and being a college coach now and recruiting and just kind of seeing me and all four of my brothers got to play for the same varsity coach. And I, and like, it was a program, like from sixth grade on. I mean, it was Delta basketball was, it was a program. And I just think it was such a, I didn't know how lucky I was at the time, to have that experience, but played for him. And he was a huge influence on me, more than I even realized at the time. I realized how influential he was for me when I actually became a head coach in particular. But then actually did not, I wasn't a very good player. People just assume that I was a decent player. I try to tell people I wasn't a good player. They're like, oh, you're just being modest. And I'm like, call my coach, right? Like, call him. Like, he will vouch. And that's what one thing that made Coach Keller such a good coach is, like, I mean, that dude, he certainly had years where he had good teams and talented teams, but he also had years where, you know, my senior year, we weren't very good, but man, like he got the most, I thought he got the most out of us. We just weren't very good. And so played for him, did not play initially in college. I went to Ball State as a freshman. Was kind of a little bit burnt out on sports, had kind of played, you know, three sports every year of high school. Was just like, man, I wasn't that good at anything, kind of jack of all trades, master of none type of guy.
Yeah.
Went to Ball State and actually became a member of their women's practice team. So that was when Tracy Roller was the head coach, Stephanie White was on their staff. And so just me and some other guys, we just go to Worthen Arena every day and just practice against the women. It was a blast. I loved doing it. It was a lot of fun. And kind of like that year kind of got kind of back in touch with how much I enjoyed just being part of a team. And I had known since I was little that I wanted to be a coach, particularly a college coach. But I kind of like lost touch with that desire a little bit later in high school. But then really that desire came back really strong in college. And so ended up transferring to Anderson University, where I played. I put played in quotation marks. I was on the team, and ended up playing there for 3 years. But then my last year actually ended up getting my first coaching job, was the head coach at Anderson Highland High School for their boys freshman team, which is a school that it doesn't even exist anymore, but that was my first kind of paid coaching deal, my last year at Anderson.
Well, you touched on something that I find interesting when you said you knew pretty early on that you wanted to be a coach. I think most of us who end up doing this at all, we get the bug pretty early, but you said college coaching specifically. I think that's fairly unique, particularly in a circumstance like you described. Not an IU fan, not a Purdue fan. It's not like you're living and dying with the ESPN games every night, and that kind of becomes what mesmerizes you. What gave you the idea that college coaching was the route you were interested in, even at a young age?
Man, it's such an interesting deal. Like, part of me, like, the older I get, it's almost like, man, I don't know that I chose coaching. It's almost like coaching chose me. You know, I feel like God put something inside me that just, like, he kind of made me to do this job. You know, I feel like it's, yeah, could I do other jobs? I probably could, but, like, man, I've been doing this for 16 years now, and I'm still every bit as excited about it as I was when I first started. You know, we had this thing at my elementary school, Royerton Elementary, right? Home of the Redbirds. Our fifth grade yearbook, it was always like, what are you going to be when you grow up? And for mine, this was fifth grade. I said NBA player, obviously, or college coach, right? So if the NBA didn't work out, I had college coaching to fall back on. You know, and I think a big part of it too was just, so my dad was my first coach. Mm-hmm. And my dad was a really good coach. And he didn't coach as a career, but he was a coach. I mean, he coached high school volleyball for a time. He was heavily involved with the Munsiana volleyball stuff and running clinics. And so he was a coach, and he coached me and all my brothers in, you know, basketball, baseball, you know, just kind of in the backyard. And he was really good at it. So my first experience being coached was being coached by my dad. Mm-hmm. And it was just a great experience. And so I just always had I think, a really high view of coaches. My first coach being such a positive experience, being my dad. I mean, every little kid looks up to his dad. And so that was part of it. And then I kind of touched on it a little bit. Like, I'd go to those Ball State games, and I just, you know, like, I'm watching the game, and I'm seeing, like, the dude's playing. Like, these guys were, like, superheroes to me. But then I look on the sidelines, and I see Dick Hunsaker, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, shoot, man, I might be able to – I can't do what those guys are doing, but I might be able to do what he's doing. All I knew is that I wanted to be a part of that environment. And so I think all those things kind of molded together. And then, you know, the more I started to kind of really make my faith my own, right, and take mm-hmm. it seriously, the more I saw just the potential for just to really view coaching as a ministry and really trying to help guys grow and reach their potential and, you know, all those things. And so it was kind of a combination of all of that. But yeah, I'm very thankful that I'm able to do it now, especially at a place like Ohio Northern. I'm thankful that I've been able to do it. I can't really imagine doing anything else.
So let's talk about that first coaching experience then. You're the freshman coach at a high school that I'm not familiar with. Was it a large high school? Talk about getting your feet on the ground, so to speak, in that. And what was the experience like for you in terms of an impact on either feeding what you knew you wanted to become or reshaping your view of it?
Yeah, so it's the high school is no more. They did away with Anderson Highland. It was a fairly large high school. I believe we were 4A, class 4A. Phil Spuljarek was the varsity head coach. Really good guy. Really thankful he gave me the opportunity to be the freshman coach. But, you know, we were terrible. We were bad. And, you know, it was my first coaching experience. And I was, part of my story is, you know, I was a pretty easygoing guy. I didn't take a whole lot of things seriously. I just kind of, like, you know, for lack of a better term, floated through life. Didn't really work that hard at anything. And then I became a coach. And it was like the second I became a coach, it was just like, oh, this, I want to do this. It doesn't feel like work. I just wanted to spend all my time doing this. And I'd never really taken anything as seriously as I took that. And so that was part of that was confirmation for me too, of like, yeah, maybe this is going to be different, right? Maybe this is going to be something that it was just kind of confirmation that it was something that I definitely wanted to do, but we were bad. I don't remember what our record was. I just remember when we got consistently hammered. And I still really liked it. I mean, I remember just going to great lengths to try to get my guys motivated. I mean, I would spend a ton of time playing in practices, and if practice didn't go well, I was upset about it. And I'm trying to figure out, man, how can I get these guys to care, you know, and all this stuff. And I remember I had a buddy working for the Indiana Pacers at the time. And this is when LeBron was in Cleveland. And I got him to get me tickets when Cleveland came to Indy. And I basically used those to bribe my guys to practice hard. So I was like, hey, we're going to have this plus minus competition. And the five winners get free. Like, I'm taking you to see LeBron. And they were like, oh, crazy. And it was so funny because these dudes were, they didn't care. They were there because their parents made them. They were super apathetic. Like, I'm trying to teach them how to, you know, give high fives, get on the floor, help their team. So you get points for all these things. So the first day we implemented it, this is when I knew, I was like, man, this coaching thing is not going to be easy. You got a point for diving on the floor, and you got a point for, like, helping your teammate up, right? You got points for all these things. And so, like, first loose ball, the entire team is just, there's this huge dog pile on the ball. Like, you got dudes diving, not even diving at the ball.
They're on bodies.
Points. Then everybody's like, they're like being strategic about who helps everybody up. So, like, you can get, and I'm just like, oh man, this is not what I wanted. But, you know, you live and you learn in coaching. But it's crazy. Like, I tell young coaches all the time, because, you know, now that I'm not considered a young coach anymore, right? I'm just coach now. I used to be a young coach. Now I'm just a coach. I'm getting the opportunity to talk more and more to younger coaches. And a lot of younger coaches can get really caught up on level. And, you know, I tell them, like, man, if you love coaching, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I feel, even to this day, when I'm in practice with my guys at Ohio Northern, it feels the same as when I was in practice at Anderson Highland. Coach, now, thankfully, we have better players than I had. But it just the act of when you're on the floor with your team, man, it just feels the same. And it feels the same as it always has. But, yeah, that was my first experience, and we were bad. But it actually led to I got a chance to coach an AAU team that summer that was really good. Got a chance to coach some really, really good players. And so, yeah, it ended up being a really, really good thing for me. But, yeah, we were not good.
You know, that's I almost think that ought to be a prerequisite for everybody's first experience, because I think there's great affirmation in, do I love what I'm doing, not do I love how it's going. I think there's tremendous value in that. And maybe I'm speaking from a place of a guy who only ever really coached bad teams early in coaching as well. But you touched on something that really struck a nerve with me. I grew up on a farm, and I just didn't like farming. And to this day, I have felt great guilt about it. My dad worked really hard to build a family farm that could support the family and my grandfather before him. And I just wasn't going to farm. And I was, I think by definition, a pretty lazy kid. Yeah. I didn't like work until I found this.
Right.
And then I loved it. And I could do it 17 hours a day from the time I was 16 years old till, you know, till I got going. And it's just that. I can remember bad teams not bothering me.
Right.
Practice, we got better, worked hard. At some point, that becomes difficult to hold on to because the world tells you, well, you got to win. You got to win. If you're doing this right, you got to win. And we'll get back to that a little bit later. I want to talk a little bit about what came next for you. The AAU experience was a stepping stone, a springboard. Was it just a momentary in-between stops thing? How did it play into what came next for you?
It was just kind of another opportunity to coach. And it was funny. The guy's name was Rob Spaulding. He was an awesome guy. He had this AU program called, he called it the Anderson Heat. And he was like, hey, like, I'd love for you to coach our team. I can't pay you, but I got this old beat up Jeep Cherokee that you can have. There, I'll give you this car. And I was just like, I was a broke college kid. Like, you know, I was like, great, done. Like, I can't remember what I was driving at the time. It was not nice. It might have even been one of my parents' cars. I think it was. But man, I was like, shoot, you'll give me a car like this thing. As long as it runs, I don't care if it's smooth. I mean, like the driver's side door didn't work, so I had to like go in the passenger side and crawl across. Like, I did not care. Like, I was like, I need a car. And so I did it, and it was great. Like, you know, I had some good trips. It was really the first time we had one kid on the team named Troy Taylor, who ended up playing at Evansville and then ended up playing overseas. He was really good. And then we had another kid named Asan Tatum, who actually was a super, super late bloomer, ended up actually finishing his career at Auburn and I believe is still playing professionally. So it was my first time ever getting to coach good players. And just like, it's a, like, you coach good players differently. Like, I don't care. Like, good players can do stuff that you can't teach, and sometimes you got to let them do it. And so it was a really, really good learning experience for me getting to coach really good players. And so, yeah, I look back on that time really fondly. Actually, my youngest brother played on that team, so I got to coach my brother. So that was fun. It was just a really, really good, fun experience, yeah.
So what came next? I mean, how did you were getting through college, getting done with college. Well, how did you – assess your next steps and go about lining up what you thought was going to be your career?
Well, I knew I wanted to be a college coach, and I was getting married. So I coached at Anderson Highland during my last year at Anderson. My wife had already, my to-be wife, now wife, Maggie, had already graduated a year in advance. So she was teaching. So I knew I wanted to, it was graduate, get married, find a college job, right? And that was kind of it. And so that's as far ahead as I looked. Those were the kind of the three things that were important to me at the time. So my wife and I got married the summer after I graduated, but really right after I graduated, it was just, I was all in on trying to find a college job. I have a great respect for high school coaches, especially actually starting out at the high school level. I mean, I couldn't respect high school coaching anymore, but I just also knew like that wasn't the route that was for me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to coach. My life changed when I was in college, and so I really was drawn to that age group more specifically. My high school coach was an unbelievable coach, but he was also a really, really good math teacher. And he was a great dad. He was a great husband. And I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know if I could be a great classroom teacher and a great coach. I mean, they both require so much. I mean, my wife was a teacher. I'm just like, man, I don't know how you do both. And that was part of it too. I was like, I want to focus all my energy on coaching. You know, that's kind of where I want my energy to go in terms from a professional standpoint. And so I started just emailing and calling every college at every level, started in Indiana, worked, you know, kind of got through Indiana, started going into Ohio, Kentucky, Michigan. And I got 3 callbacks. I got a couple emails. Hey, we don't have anything, but I got 3 phone calls. So those 3 phone calls were from Gary Chupp, who was at Goshen College at the time. Kyle Brummett, who was at Defiance at the time. He's now at Wabash, done a great job.
Tremendous coach.
He's really good. And then Matt Painter, who was at Purdue. And Matt Painter called me back. And this shows you how little I know. Like, I literally called Matt Painter and left him a message. I was like, hey, coach, like, you got any jobs? You know, basically, it's like, you know, how big of an idiot can you be? But this dude called me back. And he literally just said, hey, and he called me back at midnight. So I get a phone call at midnight. I'm in college, so I'm up. And I answer it. And he's like, hey, Niels, Matt Painter, Purdue. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm sitting here thinking, is this dude going to give me a job? But he was just like, he basically was just like, hey, I got your message. Wanted to call you back. You know, I don't have anything. But just kind of gave me some advice. Hey, here's kind of what I did. Here's some things I would think about if I were you. But just want to call you back. And I just remember being like, man, like that is unbelievable that he would call. I was nobody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like
sure.
it would surprise me even today if I called a Big Ten coach and they called me back.
Right.
Even as a college head coach, it's like those dudes got a lot going on.
Yeah.
And so I've just always remembered that, man. So I just, anytime I get the chance to root for Matt Painter, like I love that. But then ended up interviewing at Defiance and Goshen. Had a chance to go be the only assistant at Goshen. And then I would have been on staff with Kyle and Tom Heil, who's now at Baldwin Wallace, doing a really good job at Defiance. Ended up taking the Goshen job. I say the Goshen job. I made $4,000. You would have thought they offered me $100,000, though. I was as excited as I was. But the chance to I knew I would be able to recruit Indiana heavily. I had a lot of respect for the Crossroads League. You know, I thought being in that league would be really fun. And so that was my first job. Went up there, got married, went on our honeymoon, came back, moved to Goshen, and started.
And you worked for Coach Chupp.
I worked for Coach Chupp. Yeah, I was his assistant for 3 years.
It is just amazing how small the coaching world is. Coach Chupp was one of Guy's GAs mm-hmm. at Bluffton. When I was a volunteer on Coach Neal's staff, Coach Heil played for us at Bluffton. Mm-hmm. That was my first introduction to a guy that's become a lifelong friend. Mm-hmm. My first time my path ever really crossed with Coach Brummett, who I think, as you said, I think just does a remarkably incredible job as a coach, but just as a guy, teaching people how to be men. I think there's just tremendous value in all those guys, but the coaching world, as big as it is, oftentimes can be pretty small. So when you get to Goshen, you got your $4,000 a year foot in the door opportunity. What was it like in terms of your process? Were there frustrating moments? Was it challenging to embrace? You said it before, you just looked at everything as an opportunity. The same thing happens in your first job. You have to really lean into all of this encompasses the opportunity. It's not just about game day, or it's not just about, you know, practice planning. It's all of it. What was your experience like in those early years in the grind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I mean, overall, it was a great experience. Coach Chuck was like, I loved working for him because that he was not a micromanager at all. And he was just kind of like, hey, here's what I need you to do. You can figure out, you can do it your way. And he gave me opportunities to do stuff that I probably honestly wasn't even qualified to do, which was for me a great way to learn. I mean, I've just kind of always been someone that learns by doing, very hands on. And so I needed to work for somebody like that. But then, like, he gave me the freedom to mess up too. I mean, I made a lot of mistakes. I mean, I wasn't good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, right.
I worked hard, but I wasn't good at my job. You know, I'm trying to figure it out. And so, you know, I made a lot of mistakes. But he was really good to me. And to this day, now that I'm a head coach, in managing my assistants and leading my assistants, I mean, I try to take a page out of his book too, and just giving them freedom, making sure all of my assistants, they get to do some stuff that they actually enjoy. It's not just all the stuff that nobody likes. And I learned that from him. But, you know, I learned a hard lesson early in coaching, you know, that it can consume you in a negative way. You know, obviously it can consume you in a positive way, like having a lot of joy and loving what you're doing. But it, you know, like it was the, you know, I was newly married. Now I'm not a college student anymore. Like I'm out. Like this is my career, right? I'm on this career track. But it was the first time I'd ever really had something that I really, really like wanted to do really well at. I mean, outside of my marriage, mm-hmm. right? But it consumed me. You know, I would say I became very quickly a workaholic. I would say I became unhealthy. And I was so tunnel vision focused on doing a good job. And I thought at that time as a young assistant coach, I thought doing a good job meant constantly working. So if I didn't have something to do, I would just create something to do. Like I thought I had to be in the office all the time. I thought I always had to be doing something. Well, if I don't have anything to do, then I gotta develop. I gotta watch this Championship Productions DVD. I gotta read this book. And so I just, you know, I learned a lot about limits that as my time as an assistant about, man, everybody has them. You know, whether you want to admit it or not, we all got them. And it's not about what can you do in a day or what can you do in a week. It's what can you sustain over time? Because you eventually you're going to hit that wall where you're like, oh shoot, like something better change. I'm going down a path that's not good. And that certainly happened for me. And it was a good lesson to learn. And I've had to relearn that a few different times, but those are the two things that really stand out. Just coach giving me a ton of freedom, but also kind of learning, you know, it's being good at your job doesn't mean you're just constantly working, you know.
That's a wonderful point. I tell you what, we're going to go ahead and just take a real quick break, and then I want to come back and touch on a phrase that you just used about learning and then relearning. I think there's a lot of meat on that bone. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and chat about that. I just want to take a quick second and interrupt the podcast for a minute to remind you that our new platform for the podcast is Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you have an opportunity to make a donation to the podcast if you would be inclined to do so. Thanks for considering any sort of donation. One-time, monthly, or other regular donations are certainly welcome. Spotify for Podcasters is our platform, and they're providing an easy option for you to do so just by clicking the link at the end of the episode. Thanks for your consideration. And now back to the podcast. So, Coach, you touched on learning a valuable lesson about sustainability and limits. When you're 23 years old, you're not supposed to embrace that. So talk a little bit about what it meant to learn that. And then if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to kind of follow up from there.
Yeah. So I learned it because I had a panic attack. I mean, at least I think that's what it was. You know what I mean? I mean, I had never really experienced anything like it. So the story is Coach Chubb, he basically, you know, my third day there, my second day there, kind of calls me into his office like, hey, I want you to head up recruiting. And I'm like, awesome. Let's go. Right? Like, I wanted it, which shows you how stupid I was. But I was excited about it.
Sure.
Well, then the conversation stops, right? The euphoria of your boss giving you a responsibility that you thought you wanted kind of wears off. And then you're like, okay, so how do I do this? Right? Like, and obviously, you know, he didn't just like leave me hanging. Like there was some guidance there, but you know, long story short, we get to, you know, like, I can't remember that it was in the season. Right. And we didn't have any commits, and I had created this narrative in my mind that we were going to be the first college basketball program in the history of college basketball to not get a single recruit, right? Like, it's like, that's just kind of in my mind, that was the narrative, right? That I just kind of let myself believe. And so I'm stressed to the max about recruiting all the time. I mean, I'm going to everything. I'm calling kids. I'm doing all this stuff, right? Just because, like, oh, we got to recruit. And I remember it was one night, you know, I just shot awake in the middle of the night. I mean, I was as awake as I've ever been in the middle of the night, and my heart is beating out of my chest. And it's almost like I'm having like an out of body experience. Like, I'm just like, oh, this is like, what is happening? Like, I didn't know. So I didn't want to freak my wife out, right? So I kind of get myself out to the couch, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm just like, this is like, I don't know what to do, like what's going on. Like, it's, you know, I feel like, oh, this could be it. It's kind of like one of those deals. Yeah. And so I just remember trying to breathe, and you know, I was literally thinking about recruiting, and I was stressed and all this stuff. And I just remember I turned on the TV, and there was a college hockey game on. I don't know anything about hockey, but I just remember sitting there watching this college hockey game, just trying to settle myself down. And I stayed awake basically the rest of the night, and then, you know, had a conversation with my wife the next day, and we were like, man, like, this is not okay. Like, this is not normal, right? Like, this doesn't happen to normal people who are living healthy or even moderately healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just had to make some changes and learn some things. And but then, you know, like, as good as coaches can be at learning, we are elite at also forgetting.
Right? Amen. Like,
as good as we are at learning something, we're that much better at forgetting. And so that's something that I've just kind of had to relearn, especially, you know, you go from, you know, my time at Goshen was good, but then you change jobs. Right? So now you're in a different job. And so you almost have to relearn it. That, and then you become a head coach, right? And then I became a head coach, and I definitely had to relearn it. And so, yeah, I've had to there's been different iterations of what that lesson looks like, for sure.
So we have a common understanding, I think, in American culture that we have triggers. You know, we talk about it with students at the school that I work in. What's their trigger? But almost always trigger is negative connotation. It's something that happens or something that gets said that creates some negative response. That a trigger leads to a negative response. But I am a huge believer in the idea that we can create triggers for the positive things we want. And if you talk about coaches having this gift for learning something, forgetting it, and having to relearn it, I think it also demonstrates the importance for positive triggers. Do you have a way or ways that you can recenter yourself, you know, fairly quickly? Or do you use habit, routine, phraseology, something that you can do to kind of remind yourself of what you already relearned a couple of times and shorten that process?
Man, that's a good question. I guess when I hear you ask that question, I guess what I'm hearing you more ask about is just kind of like lifestyle design in general, and maybe like the idea of balance,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And so, I mean, for me, like, it starts, well, first of all, I guess my wife is amazing. Right. And I think to have any type of longevity and success in this profession, like, your spouse has to be not only like cool with it, but like all in with you and be doing it with you, right? And so my wife has been really, really good for me in trying to just kind of be in it with me and like help me through things. But one of the things that we've kind of embraced together is we kind of have rejected this idea of balance, right? Because balance to me kind of creates this connotation where like you kind of have equal parts of everything all the time. And that's just impossible. I think it's impossible in almost any job, let alone coaching. And so the concept that's really, really helped us is the idea of appropriate imbalance, right? Because the season, it takes what it takes, right? I didn't invent what it takes, right? Had I invented, I would have made it take less.
And you aren't going to change what it takes.
It's not changing. You don't, as a coach, you do not. The choice isn't like, what does it take to be successful? The choice is, are you willing to do what it takes, especially in the season? And a big part of that is the recruiting piece at the college level, right? Mm-hmm. That added on, you know, all the travel with that and, you know, just kind of the mental energy with that. But, you know, like there's going to be some sacrifices that you're going to have to make during the season as a family. And that's okay. The question then and what we've tried to be able to do is then when you get out of the season, how can you kind of swing that pendulum back? Right. So you're going to be a little bit disproportionately focused on your job during the season, like the nature of you have to be. But then, you know, that you get out of the season, can you swing it back? And that's something that we've really, really tried to do. And we've learned I feel like we're continuing to learn how to do that better. And, you know, life stage changes now that we're, you know, we don't have any babies in our house, right? Like our kids are 8, 6, and 4, so still little kids. But man, that newborn phase, that was crazy. You know, like you're just trying to survive. You know, you got twins. Shoot, I'm preaching to the choir. So, you know, we continue to try to learn what that looks like. But then also, just for me, there are two things that I have to do year round, regardless of the season. I've got to spend regular time in the Word and in prayer. You know, I kind of call it my quiet time. I've got to have that time year round, and I've got to move. I've got to exercise year round, right? Because those are two things that really give me energy. And I feel like mental, physical, emotional, you know, all that stuff's connected. And so being able to do those things year round, you know, combined with having a spouse that is super supportive and, you know, we're kind of in it together, we are in it together. Kind of combined with that idea of appropriate imbalance, you know, those are all kind of things that we've learned and tried to implement over the years, that have certainly helped. But it's still, you know, it can still be a struggle at times.
I think it's an absolutely fantastic term, appropriate imbalance, because I'm not sure that there's any walk of life where it's more useful, more necessary, and more valuable maybe than what you're talking about with coaching. I love that term, and it may be, if there's one thing that people can take away from this podcast, that's probably it. But I always like to ask this question just because I think the answer is never quite the same for whoever I'm talking with. With the passion that you have, the energy that you have, the drive that you have, and with what you've experienced at 23, 24, 25, 26, you know, you spent your time under Coach Chupp. When did you know you were ready to be a head coach, and how did it manifest itself for you?
Man, I don't know. I became a head coach so early. So I don't think I ever had this time. Like, I was the entire time I was with Chubb at Goshen, I loved being an assistant, and I was excited about being an assistant. I wasn't even thinking about being a head coach. I was just trying to be a good assistant. You know, then I got to work for Coach Trost at Lewis, and I got to work with, I was the second assistant there. So I was the graduate assistant, then Adam DeMong was the top assistant, and then Trost. So I got to, and Adam DeMong had Division I experience. Trost had been everywhere. I mean, he was at Michigan. And, you know, so I got a chance to work then. So I'm learning like crazy. I didn't really think about becoming a head coach until my time as a GA was up. So it wasn't like I wasn't getting fired, but like I couldn't just stay.
Right.
I had to go. I had to leave and I had to get another job. Well, as that happened, Chuck had made the decision to get out of coaching and get into, he became the athletic director at Bethany Christian High School. So the Goshen job opened up. And it's like, well, if there was ever going to be a job that I could get, that was going to be it. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm ready to be a head coach. I think in my naivety, I thought I was ready, which again just shows you how ignorant I was.
Well, I like to tell people this all the time. I think being ready for something is a little bit it's underrated, because if you have a passion for something, you have a vision for how you want to do it, and the energy to get that done, you're ready. You might not be anywhere near prepared, but you're ready.
That's a good way of saying it. I was ready to be bad. I was very ready to be bad. And so it just, you know, my motivation was more like, yeah, I wanted to be a head coach, but also like I needed a job. And I hadn't made any money. You know, like I made $4,000 my first year, got a pay bump to $8,000 my second year as an assistant. Made $10,000 my third year as an assistant at Goshen. So those 3 years combined, I made less than what, you know, somebody would make in a normal 1 year full-time job.
So in your 3 years at Goshen, it was just you and Coach Chupp, two-man staff. You weren't taking any classes or anything like that. So then when you make the leap away from Goshen, you got to go get that master's degree, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was a good situation at Lewis. I got my master's paid for. I got a $6,500 stipend, and then I got a meal plan. So my wife and I, like, we were using that thing, man. We were trying to save money, and, you know, we were trying to pay off some college loans in the process. So then the Goshen, you know, the opportunity to get a full-time job in coaching, period, after that. Like, I would have taken a full-time coaching job in Alaska if they were, you know, it just so happened to be at Goshen, and it just so happened to be a head coaching job. So, you know, so much of that was outside of my control. But fortunately, it worked out, yeah.
Now, I've talked to a lot of guys that experience when they get their first head coaching job for a brief period of time, a day, a two, an hour, whatever it is, where there's a moment of, wow, I got here, and thanks to this guy, and thanks to this guy. Did you have that moment where when you're getting ready to take your head coaching position, you find yourself reflecting on the people that were a part of your journey? And did you draw from anyone specifically or any experience specifically as you prepare for job one, day one?
Oh, I mean, it was getting that, when that job got offered to me, I mean, it was emotional. I mean, like, part of that was relief. You know what I mean? Like, oh, shit,
I'm employed.
I'm not going to be unemployed. I can stay in coaching. Like, I'm going to have health insurance. Like, part of it was relief, right?
Yeah.
But then part of it was, it's like, you know, anytime you experience this is how it's been for me. Anytime I've experienced any type of professional success, it's always been emotional, because you think about like how many people have helped you to get there. Right. And so like, you know, I've been fortunate enough to win. I won a Coach of the Year award when I was at Covenant 1 year. And I just think that the title of that award is the dumbest thing ever. You know what I mean? Like,
I do.
I mean, like, come on. Like, the amount of shoulders that a head coach has to stand on, the amount of people that have to kind of be working and helping for a head coach to experience any level of success, you know, for that coach to just get all that recognition, to me is crazy. But, I mean, that's just kind of the nature of our society a little bit. But, like, yeah, it was emotional, you know. First, I mean, just for me and my wife, you know what I mean? I mean, there's, mm-hmm. you know, we had to say no to a lot of things from a lifestyle standpoint to kind of chase that down. And so now to be able to kind of get to that next stage of our career as early as we did, I mean, it was pretty emotional. I mean, my parents helped a lot. Her parents helped a lot. I mean, there's just so many people that helped us to be able to kind of sustain life in those early years of being an assistant.
So you're 27, 28 years old, you get a head coaching job. Maybe you don't remember it very well, maybe you do, but what's the first paralyzing thought that you have?
I don't know. And honestly, it feels like a different life ago. It's so hard for me to remember details. I do know that, like, I mean, I started recruiting immediately. Because, I mean, I knew from experience how difficult it was to get players at Goshen.
Yeah, sure.
And so just that was a kind of, and then just, man, I got to hire a staff. That's, and I knew what the budget was, and it wasn't great.
That's always the thing that jumps to mind for me is when you get a head coaching job, it's easy to start thinking recruiting. It's start thinking X's and O's and style of play. It's not always easy to get your head around. I got to have a, and I put staff in quotes. For some people, it might be one guy.
Oh, yeah.
For some, it might be two, and I need a GA, or it might be, I need a GA, and that's all I get. So talk about that process. You've never had to build a staff before.
Well, I've never thought less about basketball than when I became a head coach, right? I mean, I did not think about an X or an O or a play. I didn't think about that for a couple months, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, I mean, for me, I was unbelievably fortunate with the staff that I had when I was at Goshen. So there was a guy named Brandon Locken that was already there with Chuff, and he stayed on. He is now the head coach at Lake Superior State on the women's side. And then I was able to hire a guy named Mike Hunter, who actually played here at Ohio Northern.
Mike's a podcast alum.
Oh, Mike's my guy.
Cheese is the best.
And so I had, like, to get the – and he's the head coach at Shawnee State now, right? Like, he's had a great run as a head – like, I had two future head coaches on my staff that year. And, man, did I need those guys. Not only for the work, but just the relational component. Those guys were so good for me. I mean, I had some significant health issues that year, and those guys being able to literally took over the program. I mean, it got to the point where I had to take a medical leave of absence with 10 games left in the season, and those guys literally ran the program. And so I've been so unbelievably fortunate with assistant coaches over the years. But man, that first staff still means a lot to me just because of what we went through together.
Yeah. And we don't have to take over the podcast with it, but if you wouldn't mind touching on your health concern and the journey that you went through, it had to have impacted a dozen different things in your life in a dozen different ways. But how did you manage your outlook, your mindset?
So I got diagnosed with cancer. I got the head coaching. I got hired in, I think it was March or April. And then basically a month later, got diagnosed with cancer. And I still remember the phone call. I still remember where I was sitting. I still remember a lot of that's kind of, you know, you get a phone call like that, you don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was pretty challenging. I mean, ignorance is bliss, right? Like, I didn't know. I thought, I mean, just, you know, like, there's been multiple, call it arrogance, call it ignorance, whatever you want to call it. There's been multiple examples on this podcast of I thought I could do something that clearly I couldn't do. and so I thought, oh, well, it's going to be fine. I'm gonna get the treatment, but I'm gonna coach. Like, this isn't impacting anything. Like, I gotta build this program, right? And that was the priority in my mind, even more than my health, which is crazy to say out loud, but it's true. And so I just kind of went at it, and it got to a point where I just hit a wall, where it was a combination. I think it was a combination of stress, the treatment. I became very depressed, to where I woke up one day and couldn't get out of bed. And I never had any experience with depression before this. And so it's actually been a great blessing to be able to now kind of have more of an understanding of what it's like. And it's allowed me to connect with players in a way that I wouldn't have been previously. So I'm glad it happened.
Depression is one of the most common things in the world that has the least level of empathy societally.
Correct.
People don't know what it is. You can say the phrase, it is unreal to me how common it is, but how little is understood about it and how difficult people have empathizing with it. So you just, that really struck a nerve with me because I've been diagnosed with depression since I was 19 or 20.
Yeah. And before, but you know, you've probably heard this, right? But before I experienced it, I just thought it meant you were sad.
Yeah.
Like that's what I thought.
My dad's answer to depression is just quit that then. You just got to stop that.
Yeah.
That was his answer.
Yeah. And that was mine too. And so, you know, I'm glad I experienced it. I don't want to again, but I'm glad I did. But couldn't get out of bed. Called my dad. Beckman was just like, Dad, like, I think I got to take a medical. Like, I think I got to stop. Like, I think I have to. In my mind, it was quitting. It wasn't quitting.
Right.
Right? It wasn't. But my dad was like, man, he's like, you got to do it. You got to take care of yourself. And, you know, for whatever reason, I just needed to hear that from my dad.
Absolutely.
Called my AD, Tim DeMont. He was great about it. But then my staff took over. And they did a great job. It was a tough situation. My one assistant, Brandon, he actually lived in my basement at the time. And so, and, you know, he came every day. He would come home and I'd see him come home. I'd see him leave. And man, it was just, I'm just sitting there on the couch. I mean, it was a crazy time. Feels like another lifetime ago, but yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate to kind of come out on the other side. And yeah, it changed a lot. I don't know how something like that couldn't change you.
Right.
But yeah.
So how do you, I don't know how to transition to it. I mean, you eventually leave Goshen to go to Covenant College, not an institution a lot of our listeners will be familiar with. Mm-hmm. Talk about that process of when it was time to leave Goshen and what was your experience at Covenant like?
I mean, Goshen is, I'm very thankful for my time at Goshen, but I also don't think it's anybody would consider that like a destination job, right? It's a very, very difficult place to be a coach, you know, just in terms of the commitment to athletic excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, you know, that's the school, it's their decision, right? What they commit to. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just the reality of the situation. And so I knew I wanted to make a move, you know, and just for a lot of reasons. We did love living in Goshen, but it was a tough place professionally. And so the opportunity came where Covenant actually wanted to hire my best friend, Jeff Clark. He's the associate head coach at Indiana Wesleyan. They tried to hire him. The athletic director, Tim Sedgwick, called him. He's like, I'm not interested, but if you're interested in me and this is kind of what you're looking for, you should talk to Neil. And so Tim called me, Tim Sedgwick, the AD at Covenant. Called me. I remember I was on family vacation. We were like a VRBO. Got a call from this guy. We ended up talking for like an hour and a half. Hit it off. We had, I think the timeline was, and this is how coaching goes, right? The timeline was, I think we talked on a Wednesday. I had a phone interview on Friday. Flew down for an in-person interview on Saturday. Accepted the job Sunday morning. I mean, it was quick.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just ended up going down there. It was a great experience. We got a chance to live in a part of the country that, you know, it's just a really cool part of the country.
Where's Covenant located?
Right outside Chattanooga, Tennessee. So it's on top of Lookout Mountain. Technically, it's in Georgia, but we lived in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is a great city. A lot of great people, great friends. And man, when I got down there, like the previous coach, Kyle Taylor, Artie Culver was the coach before me. He was the coach for a year, left to go to Vanderbilt. Kyle Taylor was before him. So between Kyle and Artie, like, they were ready to win. I mean, we had players. Will Crumley was coming in as a freshman who would go on to be an All-American, three-time conference player of the year, absolute stud. Had him all 5 years I was there. So, like, we had guys. They were ready to win. And it was a great experience for me. Because when I was at Goshen, you know, we had a little success, but we struggled too. And so you kind of have that doubt, right? That do I have what it takes? Are my standards too high? You know, am I capable of leading a program to a championship? And man, I had a group at Covenant that was so fully bought in. They met the standards and then some. you know, we were able to have success. We were able to win. And so it was, for me, I needed that. You know, I don't think those guys know what they did for me personally in just the way they bought in and the way they went about their business. And it was a great 5 years for my wife and I.
5 years that I'm going to assume went by fairly quickly. As we discussed before we started recording, it seems like it goes faster all the time. Mm-hmm. What was the impetus behind maybe making the decision that it was time for something different?
Ohio Northern came open. And I saw that, you know, you're aware anytime you're from the Midwest and you leave the Midwest, right? If a Midwest coaching job comes open, you're going to kind of be aware.
Right.
It came open. I had a buddy reach out and was like, you know, I thought about it a little bit, but then I was like, I don't know, you know, like we're happy here, but then again, it's Ohio Northern. It's, you know, its reputation precedes itself. Right. Buddy reached out and was like, hey man, like, you'd be perfect for this job. And I was like, I don't know. All right. You know, cause if you're going to go after a job, I mean, that's a process. I mean, you're kind of shifting your focus from your current program to kind of go after this job. I mean, it's a competitive process. It's a lot of time, energy, mentally, physically. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go for it. Be a chance to coach at a great school in a great league. At the time when I was at Covenant, I also had to teach a class and I also had to coach the golf team,
mm-hmm.
which most people would think, oh, college, being a college golf coach, dream come true, free golf. But what, you know, like I was going more for golf than I was basketball.
It's still travel. It's still administration.
So I was going a lot in the fall and a lot in the spring. So I was just away from family a lot. And I really had a desire to not be away from my family. And so I was like, man, I could just coach basketball. I could get back closer to the Midwest. I mean, you got to understand, I took 3 grandkids, 8 hours south. I was in the dog, my mom and my mother-in-law, I was in the doghouse a little bit, you know, so get those grandkids back to the Midwest. I grew up around my grandparents. It was important to my wife and I for our kids to grow up around their grandparents. We just got to a point where I started to just get really excited about the possibility. And that's when I knew, like, man, I got to go for this thing. And just kind of made the decision to really kind of go all in trying to get it. And, you know, thankfully it worked out.
When you're pursuing a job like this, you said its reputation precedes itself. You also are very well aware with very little research that you're coming into a situation that I think had 3 head coaches in almost 40 years. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be the 4th guy in about 15. Any concern or any, I don't know if concern is the right word. How did you evaluate the lack of stability at a place like this that had been so stable for so long?
I just looked at it as a tremendous opportunity. You know, like to me, it's just the potential for growth really excited me. You know, it's kind of like my team this year. You know, we're going to be largely freshmen and sophomores. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of people are like, oh man, that's gonna be tough. Yeah, like it's gonna have its moments, but just the way my mind works, it's like, man, like, but we could grow a lot, you know. And I just, the older I've gotten, the more I've just become, I just growth, you know, kind of obsessed with growth. And so just the opportunity to grow a program, the opportunity to just kind of get back to the Midwest and a place where I was really comfortable with, you know, yeah, those, is it something that kind of goes into your mind every now and then? Oh shoot, I mean, if we don't win, like I'm gonna get fired, you know, like, yeah, I mean, like I'm not blind,
right,
you
right.
know what I mean? Like it's certainly something that you have these fleeting thoughts, but overall, you know, that it's not what drives me. It's not, it wasn't a factor into whether to take it or not. You know, to me, it's just the opportunity for growth is the thing that I focus on and that drives me and that I really think about.
I think that's outstanding, and I think it's very exciting for our place. I mean, I say our place. I'm an alum. Everybody that's ever listened to this podcast knows that, and this program matters a great deal to me personally. But so here you are now in your 3rd head coaching job. what's the, you mentioned the importance of growth. What's the evolution of Neil Young from year one at Goshen to getting ready to go into year two at Ohio Northern? What stands out to you about your own evolution? And it can be basketball or it doesn't have to be.
Shoot, that might be a better question for my wife.
I had a guy reach out to me on Twitter and suggest that I add a segment of my podcast where I talk to wives. It was suggested by a coaching veteran who I deeply respect, and it may happen.
Hey, all I know is this. Coaching wives would love that because nobody understands what the wives experience other than coaching wives. I mean, it's so unique. I mean, there's actually a ministry called Nations of Coaches that my wife and I are affiliated with. I'd encourage any coach to check them out, particularly at the college level. They deal primarily with college coaches. But they have, part of their ministry is just ministering to the wives, right? Getting the wives connected because it's so important. And so you may develop a following that you don't even know that is out there because that I think that would be a good thing.
Sounds like a growth opportunity for me.
Right. There you go. There you go. Man, how I've changed, hopefully, because I made it about me all the time early on in my career. And I like to think and hope that I do make it more about others, more about serving and elevating and platforming others, particularly my staff and my players. That's something that is very important to me. Now, that doesn't mean you do it all the time, but it is something that's important to me that I want. You know, you think about something I think about often is like, when I'm done, what will my players say about me? Like, what do I want my players to say about me? Mm-hmm. And I hope that when I'm done, most of my players will say that I cared about them more than I cared about my career, right? I want to put them ahead of like advancement, I guess you could say. Because it's easy, man. It's easy to get caught up in winning, advancing, doing things like that. But man, I want it to be about the players. I want it to be about my staff. And then I hope I'm able to do it in a way that where I actually use this as an advantage for my family as opposed to a disadvantage, right? And I think my wife and I are constantly learning more and more how to include our family in this and how to include our guys in our family. You know, we don't want it to be separate. We kind of want it to be together. And then the last thing is, I think I really struggled, you know, as a believer in coaching with this question of like, how does my faith apply to the like day in, day out aspects of coaching? And, you know, and I think I've grown a lot in understanding that God cares about the minute details of how I do this. And I you know, God, he cares about those things. And so I think I've grown in understanding how to apply my faith and how to apply the gospel to the day in, day out, mundane even things of this job. And that's actually been, that's added a lot of joy. That's added a lot of fulfillment. And so I think those three things are things that I hope are true. But again, like, you should ask my wife.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she would know way better than me, probably.
I may call her before I call Trove.
Yeah.
So, duly noted. And look, you're, again, striking a nerve with me because, hell, I'm 51 years old. And I look back on a coaching life, and I put that in air quotes, that I've lost a lot of my coaching life because I decided at times I can't be a person of faith and coach and do them both well. Like I didn't have the ability to find out how to, so I just left coaching a lot of different times, whether it was guilt or whether it was conviction. I just would leave it behind for a little while because I felt like it's not gelling. I'm not making it work. And there is a real struggle with that. And on top of all that, Neil, you also still have this great passion for this thing. At the college level, there's the recruiting, there's the program development, there's the fundraising, there's all that. And still the fun part of the game still is the X's and O's and mastering your craft, so to speak. Where's your evolution been in that regard? If you think about the guy that was going to coach offense in way X his first year at Goshen and coach an offense in now year two at Ohio Northern, you mentioned early in the podcast that when you've got guys that can play, it's really important to let them play. Well, you've seen a very wide range of talent level between your first year at Goshen and where you are now. How do you manage that in terms of what you try to get done from an X and O standpoint?
I always thought when I was a young coach that if it was simple, then that means you weren't advanced enough, right? I almost thought like things had to be complicated because I had to show how smart I was.
Yep.
Right? I mean, I had my first year ever as a college assistant coach when I was with Chuck, we had a kid named Eric McCullough. Eric McCullum.
That was my first scouting report at Bluffton University. Eric McCullum was a leading scorer on that team.
So for those who don't know, Eric is CJ McCullum's older brother. He's been in Europe for, I don't know, over a decade, making millions of dollars. I'm pretty sure at this point he's the all-time Euro Cup leading scorer, like all time. I mean, this dude is an unbelievable player. I had no idea how to coach that dude, right? Like, I'm trying to coach. I mean, this dude is like, so Michael Jordan has a quote where, like, he said, like, I would jump and then figure it out. Well, like, Eric could do that, but I thought I had to coach him like everybody else, right? And then, flash forward to my third year at Goshen. It was the year we were good. We had a good team. We had a guy named Dominique Bolden. Dom Bolden ended up becoming like honorable mention All-American for us. And we won because of him. Like, that dude was an elite closer. And all we did every game, the last 5 minutes of the game, we had two plays. One was called punch and one was called curry. Punch was Dom would go set a down screen. The guy would pop out. We would throw it to the guy on the wing, and he would throw it to Dom. And then everyone else would just stand there. Just get out of the way. Curry was basically the same thing, but he would catch it on, like, the elbow slot area. That's it. The two simplest plays ever. But it was just, hey, you're not going to draw up anything that's better than giving the ball to Dom Bolden and that dude doing whatever he wants. He could do whatever he wanted with it. And he did. And he closed out game after game after game. The simplest thing ever. And it's just like, I think the more I've done it, the more I've realized, like, there's a lot of different ways to do it. You know what I mean? Like, find the way that matches your personality. Find the way that you enjoy it. Having some flexibility doesn't mean you're a pushover, right? Like, you can let...
That's a great word,
like,
right there.
Will Miller, he'll be a sophomore for us this year. Yeah, we have our defensive system, right? We have rules. Well, Will Miller has hands and feet that are so quick defensively that, like, that dude, he can go outside the rules because he's different, right? Like, and just, that's okay, right? It's okay to let guys be who they are, right? It's okay to be flexible.
What you're describing is a phrase that for me was a real struggle as a young coach that, if I could encourage any coach to embrace any concept, it's freedom within structure. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. It's not easy, particularly if you're used to coaching overachieving teams that aren't particularly talented. You feel like you have to scheme it for them. You have to, but freedom within structure is really important. So I always ask this question, and I don't always know that I have a real clear idea of exactly what I'm asking, but at your level, it's 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. 40 minutes of polar bear basketball looks like what?
Hopefully it looks like our program mantra, which is live last, not lions.
I was going to ask about that last. That was going to be my last question.
That's what I want people to see. You know, we talk about on offense, you know, we have a term, mentality over system. We want our guys. To me, the longer I've done it, it's their mentality, right? Where's their mind at? Where's their heart at, right? And if you got five guys on the floor with the right mentality, you can run whatever you want. You know, you can run flex. You can run, you know, shuffle cut down screen. You can run America's play continuity. You can run Euro ball screen. You can run whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter. So we preach mentality over system. And so, you know, we want people to see live last. And what live last means to us on the floor is every time we cross half court, I want all the guys thinking, how can I create a shot for a teammate? How can I create a shot for a teammate? We're motion. And so there's a lot of different ways you can kind of do things. And we encourage creativity. But I want them thinking that. How can I create a shot for a teammate? How can I create a shot for a teammate? But then when you have the ball, it's fearless first, right? Like, you got to be a line hunter, man. Like, you can't be afraid. Whatever the situation calls for, you got to be willing to do it. Fearless first, be a threat. And then when you don't have the ball, make a play for a teammate. And then defensively, like, live last is, man, you got to be willing to help your teammate, right? Like, if you see a way to help your teammate defensively, like, do that. Like, you can't just be so tunnel visioned on, like, oh, I got my guy, right? You gotta be willing to get yelled at by me for helping your teammate, right? If it doesn't work out, maybe you hear it from me a little bit. But if your mentality was like, I'm trying to live last, I'm trying to help my teammate, put him in a better position. You know, an example would be, you know, kind of like kicking guys out off ball screens and kind of getting right off switches. And, you know, we have our gap rules, but sometimes you got to adjust more. Right? To, you know, I know this guy, he's in a mismatch. I got to adjust more, you know. And then being a line hunter is like, you can't be afraid to get beat, right? Like, hey, execute the closeout. Don't go soft because you're afraid of something. And then you give up some, you know, like, let's fearlessly execute the plan, right? Like, yeah. You cannot be afraid to get beat in college basketball. Because you're going to get beat whether you're afraid or not. You're just going to get beat more if you are. And so, you know, we want people to see a team that is unbelievably selfless, plays unbelievably hard, but is also fearless. You know, in the biggest moments, in the biggest games, we want our guys to rise to the occasion because we want to make it more about their love for each other, their love for competition. They're chasing something. They're running to something. As opposed to just avoiding failure, right? Like, you cannot be afraid to fail in this business.
With 1 year under your belt here, if there's an upside to only having 1 year, you've got to have a very clear number of instances or number of contests when you can say, this is where we came close to maximizing our mantra. This is where we came closest to live the last hunt lions for 40 minutes. That's got to be a good foundational start into next year. Now, you've got film, you've got video, you've got guys that have been here. You're not selling a new product. Now you're just reinforcing. There's got to be a pretty high level of, I don't know, reassurance, but certainly motivation in that.
Yeah, it's just exciting. And that's part of it. You mentioned, like, and I'm an excitable human being, I think. I get when people tell me, hey, don't get your hopes up. Like, I don't even know what that means. Like, I live with my hopes up, right? Like, my hopes are always up. And so it's exciting to be trying to build and move in that direction because I've seen what it can do for guys when it clicks, right? I've seen what it can do for them, not only on the court, but just in their life, right? When guys start to realize, again, there's so much more to life than just your own achievements, your own comfort, your own ambition, right? There's so much more, right? When you kind of can lift your vision beyond the horizons of your own comfort and what you want and start to serve and elevate others. And I think team sports is just such a great venue for that. And so, yeah, I think we made some positive steps last year. I got certainly some encouraging feedback from some other coaches, from some alums, from our players. And so, yeah, now it's just about, can we take the next step? And that's the challenge. But it's also kind of what the exciting piece is. I think we can. And I'm excited to kind of see our guys buy in and just see them do it. Because I just, it's so fulfilling when we're able to do that. You know, because winning isn't always fulfilling.
Absolutely. You
know? And so, but I do think when we can win by doing it the way we want to do it, I think it then becomes very fulfilling.
Last question or last comment, and I'll let you respond to it however you choose to. When you got hired, I had known a lot about the process and was, you know, trying to stay plugged in, but a person who was fairly close to everything said to me when it was done, he's just so aligned. That's a very chic phrase, alignment. What does it mean to you if somebody describes you as aligned, as a person, as a coach? What does it mean to you, and how does it make you feel, I guess?
Well, certainly sounds like they meant it as a compliment, so I'll take it as one. Hopefully what people mean when they refer to that is that I'm the same guy, right? Like, I'm the same. You know, there's not a version of me that's a coach and then another version of me, or a version of me that's a coach and then a version of me that's a husband or a dad. I mean, hopefully kind of it's all come together and I can kind of be the same person. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not like putting my kids on the line and making them suicides or anything, but like in general, like the same values, the same, you know, the same, you know, reasons for doing things, you know, hopefully that's what they meant when they said that. I certainly would take that as a compliment for sure.
Well, I know this. I know that anything that gets accomplished in life, it gets accomplished. It starts with intent. You got to be intentional. And it's pretty clear that your approach to this program is intentional about the overall development and the growth. That's from a guy who's been to half a dozen practices and 10 games. That part stands out. So, I mean, that's the direction that I think that your program's headed. It makes me happy as an alum. I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you taking time to sit down and chat with me. I told you we try to keep it to an hour, and we're at an hour and a half right now. So I'll go ahead and wrap things up. I'll be in touch. Best of luck to you here wrapping up the summer. Hopefully you got a little bit of a chance to get away. I see some beach pictures on your wall in your office, but
going to Pigeon Forge next week. Excited about it.
Good for you. Hey, thanks again for your time.
Thanks, y'all.
Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life Podcast.